Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/watsonassistant.
Hello, everyone, and happy to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon. I'm Wendy Nix. Joining me, Mel Kiper, Louis Riddick, and Dan Graziano. We start this afternoon in the Lone Star State. If the Dallas Cowboys decide to host a virtual offseason program, there's a pretty good chance Dak Prescott will opt out. The quarterback plans to skip the workouts without a long-term deal in place. Cowboys, of course, franchised Prescott, keeping him under contract for at least one more year, but the 26-year-old QB has yet to sign it.
He certainly was sent an iPad, and I know he certainly can participate. For every player, it's voluntary. And in terms of their participation in the virtual meetings, and but I'm not aware and hadn't been made aware of to what degree Dak's participation level would be.
Well, here's the good news. Even in this crazy time, the one thing that apparently remains the same, Dan, is the option of voluntary, which we discuss this time every year. Nevertheless, let me start with this. Where do Dak and the Cowboys stand right now with regards to getting a longer-term deal in place?
They've had discussions, Wendy, certainly since the scouting combine and off and on. But the next deadline isn't until July 15th. That's after that date. If you don't have a long-term contract done with your franchise player, you can't negotiate one until after the season ends. So at this point, I don't think Dak's side is in any big rush. I think right now the franchise tender being unsigned, he's not under contract with the team. He wouldn't even have to go or attend online work if it were mandatory. So I think we're looking at a situation like we've seen with a lot of franchise players in the past that don't sign the tag and want to make sure that they get their long-term deal. It's just very rare for it to be a quarterback.
All right, Dan, thank you. Lewis, listen, you know, often these activities are in person. That is not the case in our current climate. So is there much of an impact here given these activities will be virtual?
Well, there's an impact only because of the simple fact that, look, Dak Prescott is the unquestioned leader of this football team, and he plays the quarterback position, and he's the most high-profile player on this team. So anytime that he's not participating, whether it be virtual, whether it be in person under normal circumstances, it's a big deal, especially when you're talking about an offseason now where they're trying to really establish under Mike McCarthy a new way of doing things, an improved way of doing things, a way of doing things that's supposed to put them over the top. And so for your ringleader, for your bell cow to not be there, yeah, it's a big deal whether it's, like I said, whether it's virtual or in person. But the simple fact of the matter is this: he's not under contract, and he has no reason right now to undercut his the leverage that he has right now, being that he is the quarterback, being that he is a free agent, being that he is someone who hasn't signed his franchise tender in any way, shape, or form. He needs to just sit tight exactly like he is doing and exercise the leverage that he has exactly like he is right now, regardless of the situation around him. And I would expect nothing different up until the point in time where he either signs that tender before July 15th or they get him to a long-term deal. I wouldn't bank on seeing Dak at all.
Well, again, July 15th, that deadline. So to Dan's point, there is some time. Listen, not a lot of time, though, between now and the draft, Mel. We're now 8 days away. What would you anticipate from the Dallas Cowboys next week?
When I did the mock first and second round, Wendy, I wanted to give them a corner, C.J. Henderson, but I gave him to the Raiders earlier, pass rusher Kalyvon Chase on LSU. I gave him to Atlanta one pick prior to the Cowboys. And it got down to Xavier McKinney to help that secondary, bolster that secondary, bring a great level of leadership that McKinney can to that deep patrol, really to that overall defense. He's a great kid, the hard worker, complete safety Xavier McKinney is. So he would really be an upgrade for what they have on that roster right now. I think he'd be one of their real guys that can really set the tone for that defense moving forward. And a cornerback, you get McKinney at safety, you need a cornerback with Byron Jones moving on. And I think Jeff Gladney from TCU. So you get McKinney in the first, you get Jeff Gladney out of TCU, had a really good career down there for Gary Patterson, can cover in the slot or outside, gives you that still versatility. I think he can be a guy can come right in and help your defensive secondary. And then look for a wide receiver at some point thereafter. Take advantage of the great depth at that wide receiver spot. They need that third wide out to help out Gallup and obviously Amari Cooper. And in this draft, with the depth at wide receiver, Wendy, you can get it.
All right, Mel, thank you. Lewis, humor me, if you will, for just a minute. Is there any reason at all the Cowboys should be drafting a quarterback, even in the later rounds in this draft?
Well, when you talk about later rounds, Wendy, sure, there. I mean, that's a possibility. I don't think that Cooper Rush is someone who they feel as though could be the long-term answer at quarterback, you know, from a developmental standpoint, if Dak Prescott in some way, shape, or form, or for some unknown reason, doesn't end up being their long-term franchise quarterback. I mean, I'm not saying that's going to happen, and that shouldn't happen, and that won't happen. So, yeah, could they draft a quarterback? Absolutely. Absolutely they could. But right now, their focus at that position needs to be first and foremost establishing the starter as far as his contract is concerned, because they have so many other things that they need to be taking care of right now as far as filling in other needs on that football team, as Mel just laid out in this draft. That's where their focus needs to be, filling out the roster around Dak, namely on the defensive side of the football, so this team can challenge when we get back on the football field the way everyone expects them to every year.
All right, Lewis, there was also this, an incident that left Dak under scrutiny after it was reported he had a party, a larger size gathering at his home on Friday night. Here's Stephen Jones.
Yes, we certainly have communicated with Dak and Zeke, and I think they're certainly aware now of how sensitive these situations are, and I don't think you'll be seeing that anymore. There's certainly guys that we have the utmost respect for, and certainly know they understand the sensitivity of the situation we're in today. It's certainly very serious and something that certainly know they understand.
Dak released a statement to USA Today regarding his social gathering. I understand and accept there are additional responsibilities and media scrutiny that come with being an NFL quarterback, but it was very frustrating and disappointing when people provide completely inaccurate information from anonymous sources, especially now. To set the record straight, I know that we all need to do our best to socially distance, and like everyone else, I am continuing to adjust to what that requires, but the truth is that I was with fewer than 10 people for a home dinner, not a party, on Friday night. From social gathering to social distancing, which will be the theme at the NFL draft now just 8 days away, could these be the top six picks? Mel Kiper Jr. thinks so in his latest mock draft. Mel has the Bengals sticking with Joe Burrow at one, and then Justin Herbert heading to the Chargers with Tua sliding all the way to six. And Mel, let's start right there. You now have Justin Herbert first off the board ahead of Tua Tagovailoa. Why is that?
Well, what you hear, Wendy, is that Herbert, because he's been clean through the process, he had a heck of a year. He improved in a lot of areas. He certainly finished strong. He showed that athleticism and that mobility, the ability to beat a defense with his legs. Then he had a great Senior Bowl week, then MVP of the game. He's done it all. He hasn't had any hiccups along the way, and that's why with Tua's injury situation, plus, more importantly, the durability concern moving forward, will he be fragile? Will he be able to hold up? We won't know that. Nobody can answer that until he's in the league, and that's a big risk to take when you have a guy like Justin Herbert from Oregon, big, strong-arm guy with all the talent in the world, great attitude, great approach, super intelligent. As I say, he nailed the draft process, Wendy, so it's easy to see why Herbert could get the nod over Tua, but Tua goes one pick behind him to a great spot, a great landing spot, the L.A. Chargers.
Lewis?
Yeah, you know, this is an interesting situation here because, look, really, this is strictly a function of not knowing what you're going to get in the future with Tua regarding his availability and his durability. Now, even when a prospect is clean, you don't know what you're going to get. But I've said this numerous different times. This is an exercise in eliminating risk, or at least, you know, trying to reduce the risk of being wrong and having a player not give you the return on investment that you need when you're drafting this high. That's the only reason why we're even really talking about this, because on the football field and projecting forward on the football field, provided both players are healthy, these two aren't even close. Tua and Herbert aren't even close. Now, that's my opinion, and I will say this too, and I've learned this over the years for sure. Two people can absolutely sit down and watch the exact same tape and come up with much different opinions on players and how they feel as though they would play in their schemes. And maybe that's the case with the Miami Dolphins. Maybe all things being equal, they do like Justin Herbert better. But I think in this case, you have an easy out as far as picking Justin because of the injury risk with Tua. But, you know, I've also seen people talk themselves into making decisions and making picks based on what their preconceived notions are, or based out of fear. And maybe this is another one of those.
All right. Some technical difficulties. Dan Graziano, are you out there? There we go.
I am. All right. If you can hear me. Yes, I think the key thing, the word that Mel said was durability. And when you talk to teams about Tua Tagovailoa, when you talk to teams about anyone who's coming into this draft with medical questions, this is the big issue that they have with this, with the draft this year. The inability to have their own doctors get their hands on the player who has medical questions. It's not about, will Tua be healthy for week one? How's he recovering from his latest injury? It's about, how do you project out 3 years from now, 5 years from now? Are you going to be able to rely on this player? And if the Miami Dolphins, if the LA Chargers are among the teams that are hesitant to do that, then yes, this is a player that could slide a little bit in the draft far beyond where we always expected him to go. And the flip side, teams really like Justin Herbert. He's been on NFL radar screens for a very long time. And it's not as if, you know, you're dropping back to someone that you have major question marks about. This is still a prospect in Herbert that teams can feel good about taking. So I think the combination of those two things has created a situation now where a lot of the buzz and a lot of the talk 8 days out is about the possibility of Herbert being the second quarterback taken.
It certainly makes sense. Lewis Riddick back with us. Lewis, the good news, knowing you, you just kept right on talking.
Yeah.
So I'll let you take it right where you were, if you don't mind.
Wendy, I don't know how exactly to take that right there, but you know what? I was still talking. And so let me just finish, and I had some other things I wanted to add on.
I don't doubt it.
I will say this. It's interesting hearing what Dan just said. I mean, that there aren't really questions about Justin as a prospect. Well, quite honestly, there are. There's a lot of questions about Justin as a prospect as far as projecting how his performance will look on an NFL field once he gets there. Look, he is a guy who right now, you know, people are becoming more and more enamored with and more smitten with, if you will, because of the fact that he is a very intelligent individual who has a lot of physical traits that you look for. But make no mistake about this. Him and Tua, as far as being quarterbacks and playing that position at a high level, are not in the same category. They just are not. It's just as simple. It's really that simple. They're not in the same category. But what is happening right now is the fact that people are becoming maybe more comfortable with Justin simply because they know that right now there isn't the same risk of him not being there and him not being able to withstand an NFL season for the foreseeable future. But all things being equal, look, Tua is the far better passer. And this is a highly, highly skilled individual right now who, I will tell you this, the medical people who I talk to tell me this, that honestly, if I was sitting in a front office right now and sitting in my basement or my office, wherever, picking next week, and Tua was on the board and I needed a quarterback, the people who I trust would told me this point blank, I would tell you to take him. I would tell you to take him based on what we know and how his rehab has been going. I would tell you to take him, especially if the gap you believe is that far between him and Justin Herbert, which I personally believe it is on the football field.
All right, Lewis, point well taken. We haven't seen three quarterbacks, by the way, taken in the first six picks since Tim Couch, Donovan McNabb, and Akili Smith went 1-2-3 in 1999. New on NFL Live, and this is from Adam Schefter. One member of the Chargers organization tested positive for COVID-19, and two others have shown symptoms. This according to sources. Owner Dean Spanos, GM Tom Telesco, and head coach Anthony Lynn were not amongst the group testing positive or showing symptoms.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Carolina signed Christian McCaffrey to a 4-year deal worth $16 million per year. That makes him the highest paid running back in NFL history. On Tuesday, Mark Ingram expressed his feelings on McCaffrey's new deal and what it should mean for the running back position.
Why should a running back be treated less than another position? You know, all these other positions get high numbers. Why is it that the running back is subject to that? Why does the running back have to be the redheaded stepchild? Like, I think he deserved that. And I think other running backs deserve bigger contracts as well. Hopefully Derek gets somewhere around there. You know, Alvin's coming up, all these young running backs. I think running backs deserve to get compensated for what they do. Running the ball, catching the ball, being able to block, just running back is essential to the success of a team. And I feel like, you know, we should be treated as such.
Well, you could argue, Graz, that Christian McCaffrey is in a league almost on his own, but what is the running back market looking like these days?
Yeah, I still think it's going to be tough, Wendy, for guys who want to try and get close to McCaffrey. You know, there are a lot of running backs either due for extensions or coming up as free agents here in the next, this offseason and next. And I think, you know, McCaffrey setting a new standard, you look and say, well, hopefully that raises the bar for all of them. But I'm not sure it will. Look at three specific cases. Mark Ingram's former teammate, Alvin Kamara, with the Saints. He has 1 year left on his contract. He's eligible for an extension. You know, he's an all-purpose player for the Saints who's very valuable in their offense, but he doesn't have Christian McCaffrey-level numbers. So if you go to the Saints for a contract extension and you're Alvin Kamara, what can you legitimately expect to get? I think that's the most interesting one of these situations. It's possible the Saints value him higher than they would just a regular running back. Dalvin Cook, first healthy season in the NFL for the Vikings this past year, had over 1,600 yards from scrimmage. That is 700 fewer than Christian McCaffrey had. Dalvin Cook, a very good player, but if he goes to the Vikings for an extension and he's looking for McCaffrey-level money, they're going to say, first of all, you just had one healthy year. Second of all, call us when you have 1,000 yards rushing and 1,000 yards receiving in the same season if you want that kind of money. And then Derrick Henry, franchised this year by the Tennessee Titans, wouldn't be surprised to see him franchised again next year. That would pay him $11.3 million a year on average over the next 2 years. Still a top five running back salary. If the Titans can do that and get away with it without adding a long-term commitment, I think they will. And this is the running back dilemma. How long does a team want or have to commit to you when the position doesn't last very long and when, you know, frankly, teams view the position as a little bit replaceable. Both Super Bowl teams started undrafted running backs in that game, the last game we saw back in Miami. So it's something to keep in mind when we talk about running backs maybe starting to move the market.
There's no question, and it certainly is a dilemma. Lewis, who among those guys would you be willing to pay big bucks?
Really, right now, I think the guy would obviously be Alvin Kamara because of the fact that he is a dual threat as a runner and as a receiver, both in the backfield and when split out wide like a wide receiver. He runs routes as well as any back, you know, not named Christian McCaffrey in the NFL right now. So he's in a unique situation. And I will say this, there's a couple points I want to make. And like, I think the best one that Dan made was his last point that he made, and that being the fact that, you know, teams like San Francisco and Kansas City both get to the Super Bowl with running backs who are earning below market contracts and with teams that are set up, whether they be defensive centric in terms of San Francisco and defensive line centric, in offense it's quarterback and wide receiver centric, and these are teams that get to, you know, the highest level and play in the biggest game without having market leading running backs. Teams follow precedent. Teams look at other teams that are being successful and they figure, how do I want to construct my roster based off of how they constructed theirs? And no one is paying anyone anywhere close to what Christian is getting. And the teams that did pay guys market leading contracts, where did they go? What happened to those football teams? They didn't go anywhere, and many of these teams regretted the fact that they paid them this way. And with Christian, he's in a very unique situation. A football team that has a new coach, new ownership, a quarterback that's on a market friendly contract that the team isn't really being built around. He is the focal point. He hit the grand slam without a doubt as far as being in the right situation at the right time. And so for other running backs to think, well, if Christian's getting it, I'm going to get mine. You're kidding yourself. You're not. You just simply aren't.
That's fair. 22 running backs, by the way, taken in the 2015 NFL draft. Not a single one is still with the team that drafted them, Todd Gurley being the last to leave his original team. Mel Kiper-Tunia has six quarterbacks going in the first two rounds of his latest mock draft. And as we've indicated before, it's Joe Burrow, Justin Herbert, and Tua Tagovailoa going in the first six picks, followed by the second tier. That's Jordan Love falling to the Raiders with the 19th pick. Then off to the second round, the Colts bringing in Jacob Eason to learn under Phillip Rivers, and Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts to the Steelers. That would be their highest draft pick on a quarterback since taking Big Ben back in 2004. We're joined now by NFL Network analyst Kurt Warner. He will be part of our NFL draft coverage as ESPN and NFL Network combine forces into one broadcast. And Kurt, Joe Burrow, the likely number one overall pick to the Bengals. What have you seen out of Joe Burrow?
Well, Wendy, when I'm looking at players and them making the jump to the NFL, I look at things that I believe can translate to the next level. And first, you look at consistency. I mean, what he did from game one through the national championship last year was unprecedented. Arguably the greatest quarterback play or season that we've seen at the college level ever. You don't just fall into that But then I look at things like processing. The biggest jump from college to pro is the ability to process information quickly. They did a lot of stuff where it was five out, where they were forcing Joe Burrow to see, react, and process things quickly. You add technique to that, which is also something I believe translates. He's got a great tight release, good accuracy because of that. I think he's got a lot of things that translate, and I like the prospect that he is moving to the next level.
All right, I'm just going to ask it simply like this, straight up. Herbert versus Tua, who you got?
I got Tua. You know, I heard Lewis talking a little bit earlier in the show, and I agree wholeheartedly with his comments. I believe Tua is the better passer. Talk about processing. He processes information extremely well. Talk about RPOs, his ability to see, read, and get the ball out of his hands. His accuracy on the mid-level to short throws is unprecedented. So I love Tua. Justin Herbert, on the other hand, a lot of skills physically with his legs, with his arm. But I don't believe he processes things. I don't think he attacks his throws like Tua does. So get to the next level. Once again, it's about being decisive, knowing what you want to see and attacking it. I give a huge edge here to Tua.
All right. Thank you, Kurt. Mel, take us through the next three quarterbacks off the board in your latest mock draft. That, of course, after Tua, who you have off the board at six.
Exactly, Wendy. Jordan Love, you think about it, the Raider pick, and that's a hunch on my part with John. We'll see what happens there. It's hard to find a team once you get past that sixth pick that would take a quarterback. But Jordan Love, 2 years ago, was brilliant. He had a lot of talent around him. He lost that line, lost his five top receivers, his top running back. Now, this year, you can't excuse away all of those bad decisions and bad throws. He was at 50% against two teams, New Mexico and Colorado State, who were combined 6-18. So if you look at it and you say, boy, he's got to improve in that area, making better decisions, not being careless and trying to force things. But he can spin the football like no other. He's got big-time arm talent. And 2 years ago, he looked like a big-time prospect when he had some help. Jacob Eason left Georgia to go to Washington. He's got imposing size. He's got a cannon arm. But Kurt Warner talked about consistency. He wasn't consistent. Eason was from first quarter to fourth. He had a great start, but as teams adjusted, made the halftime adjustments, he struggled some in the fourth quarter. You got to roll the dice on all that talent coming together in the NFL. And then you got Jalen Hurts that goes from Alabama to Oklahoma. He made progress at Alabama. Then in Lincoln Riley's offense, he shined. But does he see the field well enough to be an effective starting quarterback? I think what you're looking at there is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mike Tomlin sees Lamar Jackson, what he's done in terms of improving as a passer. Hopefully Hurts continues in that area. And if he does, like I said, he's going to be a potential second-round pick. Like I said yesterday, I've heard he is not getting out of round two.
All right, Lewis Riddick, do you see Jordan Love moving outside the top 10?
Yeah, Wendy, I think it's just going to be a function of demand, you know, as the reason why he's going to move outside of the top 10, because there's just not enough teams that really need quarterbacks if, you know, you're to assume that Justin Herbert goes before him, which I'm not so sure that he does, because look, again, from what I see and from what people who I trust who have evaluated quarterbacks and been very successful picking quarterbacks tell me, there is a growing, an ever-growing belief that Jordan could be will be the better player and be the better pro, provided that you put the necessary pieces around him and you really vibe and connect with him from a teaching and development standpoint. And I can see why people believe that. I think he's just a more natural football player than Justin Herbert, although people, again, are enamored with Justin's, you know, mental capacity, his physical traits, big arm, et cetera, et cetera. I just think if he doesn't go five to Miami, or he doesn't go, you know, six to the LA Chargers, then I think he does slide out of the top 10, but it isn't necessarily because he is that far behind a guy like Justin Herbert if he goes before him, because he's right there and many people think he's better than him or will be a better pro than him.
All right, Kurt Warner, turning back to you. Who stands out to you from these next three, this second tier, if you will?
Well, I mean, I see why you fall in love with guys like Jordan Love and Jacob Eason with the big arms and the ability to make those throws down the field. But the guy that intrigues me the most is Jalen Hurts, as Mel was talking about, is that, you know, people look at Russell Wilson and they look at Tua and they say, because of the size factor, we kind of compare those two. I believe it's Jalen Hurts that is more like the Russell Wilson. Not necessarily great right now at processing and playing within the pocket, but he's a playmaker. He's a winner. He does exactly what Russell Wilson does, and there's no greater winner in the NFL than Russell Wilson at finding ways to be successful. That's who Jalen Hurts is. I've got my eye on him. I think with his leadership, what he's shown from a pedigree, a championship pedigree, I'm excited to see what he can do at the next level.
All right. Thank you. Graz, tell me this. Some teams that may be looking to get a quarterback in the first round, but not in the top 10.
Well, Wendy, I look at, the Raiders have picks 12 and 19. Mike Mayock, their GM, said last night that they feel really good about their quarterback situation. If he's telling the truth, then they probably won't take one. But it's hard to find a lot of people that necessarily believe the Raiders think they're set. So we're watching out for the Raiders with a couple of first-round picks. The Jaguars are picking at 20. They're also picking at 9. So this is kind of sort of an answer to your question, but sort of not. They like Gardner Minshew, but if there's someone who they think projects higher, they might take a shot and see if they can add him to the mix to hedge their bets for the future. Tampa Bay's picking at 14. I don't know if you heard, they got a new quarterback this offseason, but he's 43 years old, so they have to be thinking about the future at the position already. And then I look at Tom Brady's former team, the New England Patriots, at 23. Obviously, they don't know for sure what their long-term answer is going to be, or even their short-term answer at the position. So look at them, and then Pittsburgh picking right after them as teams that might go ahead and might be able to go ahead and look at quarterbacks in this year's first round.
All right, Dan. He's not 43 till August. Don't rush this. For those of us who are there, please don't rush this.
I just thought it was August already.
Yeah, I know. It feels like.